last case of the morning. Good morning. Lorillard Tobacco Company versus AE Oil Incorporated. Mr. Odin.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is the appellant's, believe, a relatively straightforward matter. The question is whether or not the district court, in making its findings of summary judgment in favor of the appellee, weighed and considered evidence as opposed to simply applying the rule properly stated in its opinion regarding summary judgment.
If we were to remand for a hearing on the defendant's mental state, what evidence might you put on that you didn't present in opposition to the summary judgment motion?
There is certainly evidence in the record regarding Mr. Joseph's lack of familiarity with a man named Umar Amin. There is certainly Mr. Kuravilla's testimony in affidavit form regarding his not being in direct control over the sales in the store. We would further put on very clear evidence that makes it unlikely that the kinds of inferences that the district court drew would be drawable by a jury. Mr. Kuravilla and Mr. Joseph simply do not know and have no knowledge of counterfeit cigarettes. The fact that counterfeit cigarettes were being distributed through their store doesn't mean they knew. The district court simply has drawn inferences that they knew.
Is there any prior evidence of these of cigarettes, phony cigarettes? I don't smoke, so I don't know what.
There is not. There is.
But these folks are in the business, I assume. And in fact, I think somebody lit one up, didn't they, and said, "Yeah, it doesn't taste good." I don't understand the, whether a cigarette's good or bad. Don't people in the business have some knowledge that there is a possibility of phonies coming through and that there is a difference and they should be able to recognize it, especially when you're talking about tax stamps?
Well, there's the only individual who is associated with cigarettes that were being distributed was Mr. Kurian, who is a $7 an hour employee. And I mean, this is a gas station.
He doesn't buy the cigarettes. Somebody else does.
Someone else does.
Somebody puts them on the shelf. Somebody organizes it. Somebody makes arrangements for the purchase and the sale.
That's right.
And keeps track of the money with everything else. So it isn't entirely the $7.50 an hour clerk that has control over it.
Well,
there's no suspicion that he brought the stuff in himself and was passed it out, is there?
At the retail level, to the extent that, you know, the cigarettes come in cartons.
Yeah.
And then you open the cartons and you take a pack out and you deliver it over the counter.
Yeah.
Kurian is the only one who did that. That's the only evidence in the record. Now, Mr. Kuravilla was the only person who bought. And the records show that these cigarettes are bought in cartons, and these cartons are further contained in larger boxes.
And there's no evidence here, is there, that they purchased the cigarettes for a price well below the market, or that they had been warned in some way about the counterfeit nature of the cigarettes? Is there no evidence?
There is no evidence of that. The trial court, there's no argument, on the question of counterfeiting. The trial court...
I'm sorry, say that again?
There's no evidence on the question of whether these cigarettes were...
No question, you mean. They are counterfeit.
Right, they are counterfeit. I thought that's what I said.
Maybe
I
didn't. You did the first time, but when you tried to respond to her question, you...
I changed it.
You mucked it up.
Yeah. The only issue is whether or not these defendants knew. And no inferences were drawn in their favor. The summary judgment rule is clear. The judge, in this case, actually weighed the evidence. If one looks at the court's language, The court uses language, there is sufficient evidence to establish. If that locution isn't one that involves the question of weighing, it's hard to imagine another explanation. Sufficient evidence means one has compared that quantum of evidence that one considers sufficient to another quantum of evidence. The subsequent conclusion that there is evidence to establish as a matter of law isn't reached by the court, the trial court. And, of course, the rule requires, especially in this case when the moving party has the ultimate burden, the plaintiff moved for summary judgment, that conclusion must be that the evidence as a matter of law. That wasn't found here. There are a couple of things that have concerned the appellant regarding the appellee's reply. The appellee has used a few rhetorical devices, we believe, to distract from the real issue here. The appellee has made reference to certain errors in the record and labeled them as false attempts to, I suppose, pull the wool over this court's eyes. I mean, that's so far from from reality that I just want to make a point on those. The first one is the question of conclusions that, or a fact rather, that A&E bought cigarettes from a wholesaler, Midwest Cash and Carry. A&E bought cigarettes from Midwest Cash and Carry. I, in drafting the appellant's brief, mistakenly confused Midwest Cash and Carry with USA Cigarettes and U.S. Cash and Carry. And one can see how that might happen. This was a Scrivener's error. I should have written that A&E bought its cigarettes from a wholesaler, Midwest Cash and Carry, not from U.S. Cigarettes, also known as U.S. Cash and Carry. The distinction is important because A&E bought cigars, soda pop, as it says, and juice from USA Cigarettes and U.S. Cash and Carry, and only bought cigarettes, Newport cigarettes, from Midwest Cash and Carry. So there is no inconsistency in A&E's position that it only bought cigarettes from Midwest Cash and Carry. The second point that the appellants distort is the question of Kurians having tasted a bad cigarette and then put it back in stock and taken another cigarette pack down and tasted it and determined that cigarette tasted badly. I simply directed the court's attention to Kurian's deposition testimony, which contextualizes that fact. A jury could easily decide that based on Kurian's deposition testimony, that it's very unclear what he did. Did he smoke the cigarette first and determine it tasted bad?
Oh, some customer told him it was lousy.
Some customer told him it tasted lousy.
So he patted himself and said, yep, sure tastes terrible.
Yeah, but the question is whether or not that tasting was of the customer's cigarette or whether it was of a pack that was taken out of inventory.
I think the record showed clearly that he said he took it out of inventory and tried it, not the one the customer gave him.
That's correct. And then his deposition testimony contextualizes that. My suggestion is that ultimately this would be a question of credibility for the jury. How much weight do they give to that statement, given that he made similar contradictory statements during his deposition? So there was no misstatement there. I was simply trying to contextualize that fact that was admitted.
You got a minute left for your.
I got a minute left.
That includes your rebuttal, you know.
Well, I will end here, so I'll keep some rebuttal time. Thank you.
Mr. Nelson?
Good morning, and may it please the court. And good morning, counsel. We're not here today because the defendants submitted some self-serving conclusory affidavits about how they're innocent and they don't know anything. We're here because of the mountain of evidence that amassed in this case before the defendants submitted those affidavits in response to our summary judgment motion.
But just to be clear, Judge Norgal never made an express finding that the defendant's mental state was at least willful, did he?
Well, I think he did. And
can you show me where?
I can. If we start at page 9 of Judge Norgal's opinion, which is also page 9 of the appellant's appendix, he starts off in the first complete paragraph of that page with, Lorillard has submitted evidence that demonstrates that A&E knew it was selling counterfeit cigarettes. He says they knew, and that our evidence demonstrates that. He then, over the next four
Could you just stop there, because I do have a question. Mm-hmm. What evidence in the record would compel him to find that the defendants were willful as opposed to negligence?
That's what he discusses in the next four paragraphs.
Well, that evidence doesn't seem to be enough to put defendants on notice that they ought to investigate the authenticity of the cigarettes. I mean, what I'm trying to get to is what would preclude the fact finder from characterizing their mindset as negligent rather than willful?
Because there's simply too many and too much evidence. They had counterfeit tax stamps, blatantly flake counterfeit tax stamps, and it's undisputed that these things are clearly, visually, no doubt that they're counterfeit. Anybody looking at them is going to know that they're counterfeit.
Okay, the tax stamps may have been noticeably fake on inspection, but how do we know, sitting here today, that anyone at A&E actually looked at those tax stamps? Where's that evidence?
Well, the evidence is in Mr. Curavella's testimony during his deposition that he sees thousands of tax stamps, and he looks at tax stamps when he puts them on the shelves. He acknowledges that he knows he has to make sure that all the product has tax stamps before it's sold.
But what tells us that he knew they were noticeably fake on inspection?
Well, it's going to be the circumstantial evidence that Judge Norgal and we pointed out. Obviously, Mr. Curavella is not going to admit that he saw the counterfeit tax stamps because that kills his case. There are four separate bases here that Judge Norgal pointed out, summarized in his opinion, in finding willfulness that are clearly supported, and the only piece of evidence which opposes them is their own statements that they don't know anything. Before I get into those, just briefly want to address some points that the defendants brought up that I don't think are entirely accurate. He says Mr. Kurian, we got into this issue as to whether Mr. Kurian pulled something off the shelf or took it out of the pack. It's in the statement of undisputed facts. They did not dispute that the second pack was from a pack that he took off the shelf. It's undisputed. For them to come in here and now say that there's some factual difference or they want to rely on some different portion of his testimony, he should have raised that in the court below. That fact remains undisputed. As far as the district court's opinion, lays out all four factors, and this relates to the standard of review, because at the end of, I pointed out that we started on page 9, and he starts off with Lorillard has submitted evidence that A&E knew, and then he starts going through the evidence that supports that conclusion. At the end, he finishes with this. He says, as a result, he repeats, Lorillard has submitted evidence that demonstrates that the individual defendants ignored several warning signs, and he lists the warning signs. In the next sentence, he says, coupled with the defendant's behavior at the discovery stage of the litigation, the court finds that there is sufficient evidence to establish that they had knowledge that they were selling counterfeit cigarettes.
The fact that they dragged their heels in the discovery process, that hardly proves willfulness.
We're talking
about willfulness here.
Willfulness or willful blindness, either one suffices for the attorney's fees that are in dispute here. And willful blindness is, as this court stated, the standard. It is, having knowledge that they're having reason to believe that the product is counterfeit, but failing to inquire. So,
where am I going to find any finding as to the defendant's mental state? The opinion notes that A&E's liability is not dependent on whether or not A&E was willful.
That's on liability, and that's not being contested here. The discussion on willfulness is contained in pages 9 through 10, and that is the portion of the opinion where he discusses his findings on the mental state.
This is all about attorney's fees.
This is all about attorney's fees.
And whether willful or negligent. When negligent, it's optional. Willful, it's mandatory, I guess?
That it is, and I think I probably spoke a little too soon, because from Laurel's view, it's a little more than about attorney's fees, because, as you may know, they have a big counterfeiting problem, and every defendant, of course, says, I don't know where this stuff came from, and so they have a vested interest, especially in a case where the facts are as strong as they are, in setting a precedent that you have to be able to at least explain the presence of counterfeit cigarettes. These guys can't even produce a receipt showing. They say they purchased from Midwest Cash and Carry. There's not a document in the record that shows they purchased from Midwest Cash and Carry. It's solely their testimony. They claim that they purchased from someone we acknowledge to be a legitimate supplier. At the same time, they withheld from us during discovery the identification of another company who is known to have been selling this identical exact batch of counterfeit cigarettes. Amin Umar and his associates at USA Cash and Carry were known to be selling this stuff. These guys, in addition to stalling the depositions, we asked them for bank statements. They produce a bank statement, canceled checks are missing. We asked for the canceled checks. That's when we find out about USA Cigarettes. They were hoping we wouldn't notice that the checks were missing. Those canceled checks are what led us to Mr. Umar, and those canceled checks, along with all the other evidence in this case, is what the judge relied on in concluding, not only based on the evidence, but based on their discovery behavior, that they are willful. And what behavior during discovery is under the case law that's developed, certainly a factor to be considered in determining willfulness.
Is there a figure in attorney's fees that is agreed to? Has that already been decided, or is that?
It has not. We have made our filings with the district court. There has been no responsive filing made, and I don't know it off the top of my head, but it's in the neighborhood of 150.
It'd be a lot more than the other money involved, I assume.
It is more than the yes, it is. We would submit, Your Honor, that this, for starters, the standard of review in this case should be a clearly erroneous standard. There was, and is included in the record, a sanctions motion for discovery pending at the time this was ruled on. It was filed concurrently with the summary judgment motion. Judge Norgel's comments in his opinion clearly indicate that he is making his findings as a result, not based on his observations of the defendant's behavior during discovery, in addition to the facts of the record. And that is a type of decision that is typically subject to the clearly erroneous standard. In addition, all the underlying facts, what was sold, what happened, all of that stuff was either never disputed in the first place or is no longer disputed now if you read the defendant's brief. They're simply arguing over the conclusion that was drawn. Judge Norgel was in the best position to make that decision, and we think that that standard applies. Obviously, we think that this case should be decided in Laurel Art's favor regardless of which standard applies. I would submit that the four bases that Judge Norgel made his opinion based on and that we submitted in our brief, any one of those four would be adequate. A retailer in Chicago who has counterfeit tax stamps that are plainly, observably counterfeit cannot say he didn't know. And he cannot blame his cashiers and say his cashiers only did it. In fact, Mr. Curavilla specifically said in the defendant's additional facts and in his affidavit that he submitted in response to summary judgment, he personally stocks every item in the store. Gas stations don't stock by cartons. They stock by packs. They all go in those little pack racks we all see above the register. He had to have done that. He can't say that he personally stocks everything and in the same breath say that he didn't ever touch these particular cigarettes. It's impossible. And that is why we are here on summary judgment, because Judge Norgel agreed. He can't have it both ways.
Okay. Thanks. How much time you got left here? You're done.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm sorry. Mr. Odom?
Stumbling there wasn't eagerness to finish. But I really slept. courts of law are not places to make social policy. Laurier Lard's concern about some general counterfeiting problem is not what the standard is here. There's no evidence that either of the individual defendants knew that there were counterfeit cigarettes.
Is he correct in saying that the stocking was done by one of your clients each time? Is that what he testified to?
That's what he testified to was that he bought, he signed off on the
No,
he didn't stock. There are two parts to the stocking issue.
He didn't testify that he stocked them himself?
If I can explain,
That's an easy yes or no answer. He didn't say that.
No. He bought the cartons. The cartons were put in the storeroom. The stocking, that is taking the individual cartons and then putting them over the till, the cash register, is a different matter. And the salespeople did that. They would go in the storeroom and then stock. But there's no evidence at all of direct knowledge by any of these defendants. These are just inferences about their state of mind, and those inferences should have been drawn against the moving party. And we ask that this matter be sent back down so that my clients can have a fair hearing before a jury on the question of whether they willfully or were willfully blind in connection with the distribution of these counterfeit cigarettes. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement. And that completes our arguments for today. So the court will be in recess until tomorrow morning.